Today is the beginning of what is unofficially new smartphone launch month. HTC is kicking it off, and in the next couple of weeks, Samsung, Motorola, and Microsoft all have their own unveilings. And the last and perhaps most highly anticipated is Apple, which is expected to release the new iPhone in about 3 weeks. And as always, there is a lot of hype. Ina Fried, senior editor with the tech news site Recode, joins us from KQED in San Francisco to talk about the iPhone and some other Apple news. Ina, welcome back.
Always good to be here.
Well, there are always rumors about iPhones, but let's start with what we actually know about the new one. Can we expect anything in particular, anything new, anything revolutionary?
Well, we are hearing from our sources that there are going to be two distinct new models, one with a 4.7-inch screen and one with a 5.5-inch screen, both of which are larger than the current iPhone. So that is a departure. Usually, Apple introduces only one new model. Last year, they sort of broke with that tradition with the iPhone 5C and the 5S, although the 5C was really just an iPhone 5 in a plastic case.
And when you say larger screen, it does sound like Apple's following rather than leading on that one, because there are other phones out there right now with larger screens.
There are. Samsung had the Galaxy Note now for 3 years, which has sort of pioneered the phablet category, to use a tired phrase. And I think there has been demand. I think a lot of people were surprised when Samsung did it. I certainly was, that this would be popular in the mainstream. I thought this was a niche device, you know, and it's turned out that people really do like these bigger screens, especially around the world where people may not have a phone, a tablet, and a computer, and their phone is actually their primary computing device.
Well, and tablet sales have been falling, right?
Well, they've definitely leveled off. The growth is not what it was. The iPad in particular has seen some declines. The market overall is still growing a little. But, you know, I think people aren't buying them in the same numbers and they're not replacing them as quickly.
One thing we've been hearing about is sapphire glass on the new iPhone.
Apple has invested in sapphire, so we're going to see it soon in something, and most likely the iPhone. Sapphire is stronger even than Gorilla Glass, which Corning makes. Obviously, a lot of phones are dropped, a lot of screens break, and anything that helps is a big boost, both for consumers that don't want to have to buy their phone twice, as well as warranty repairs and costs for the manufacturers.
So we may see an end to those very famous, at this point, shattered iPhones that everybody has to hold on to until their contract runs out.
Yeah, certainly hope so.
What else on the new iPhone?
One of the interesting things to see will be whether they include a technology called NFC or near field communications. This is a technology that basically lets you tap your phone to something nearby and then do something. The most exciting example would be to pay for things. So if there was an NFC terminal in Starbucks, you just pop your phone against it and pay. But it lets you connect to all manner of things. We've seen speakers, and this has been adopted by other phone makers, Samsung, but a wide number of phone makers, Nokia on the Windows Phone side. We've seen that a lot. Apple has historically resisted, but Apple's famous for not including something, saying something isn't important until that very moment when it says, well, it's important the way we do it. So if they do NFC, expect them to talk about it as if NFC by itself isn't very useful, but wow, look at what we're doing with it.
Another thing we're hearing about iPhones is that they may actually be the most secure smartphones, the hardest to hack. Is that true?
Well, this is always a tricky thing because there's a science that no one understands in terms of what's theoretically, and then there's practically speaking, have they been hacked? And certainly Apple in the latter category is doing better. I mean, Android is very open, which a lot of people like. You can customize it a lot more. You can do different things with an Android that you can't do with the iPhone. But all that openness sometimes comes at a cost, and it is the case that it's harder to hack into the iPhone so far. People have found it harder. And as a result, companies that are looking for phones are more comfortable with Apple iPhones than they are bringing Android into their businesses.
You know, I want to ask you about a couple of other things that have brought Apple into the news recently. Apple announced last week that it's begun storing some of its Chinese user data on servers inside China. It's the first major U.S. tech company to do that. Why is Apple doing that, and how significant is it?
Well, Apple has saying that they're doing this to bring the data closer for performance reasons. So the closer your data is, the faster you get access to it. It is interesting, obviously, that they're choosing to keep it in China. Historically, companies don't want much data in China for fear over what the government may ask them to do with that data. Apple has stressed that, you know, it's encrypted. It's not keeping the encryption keys in China. That said, it's operating, it's doing business in China. And typically, when you do business in a country, you have to operate by the local laws of that country, which means if the Chinese government were to say, you know, turn over X, it's hard to imagine that Apple could not do that and still keep doing business. It's one of the reasons Google, for example, does a very limited amount of business directly in China, is they don't want to play by the local rules. Microsoft, Yahoo do business in China, but they have, you know, done the best they can to minimize their exposure there. So it'll be interesting to see what that means. Apple has taken some steps to not even have some key information. So with iMessage, it says we don't even have the keys. The user has the encryption. It's in their device. So we can't unencrypt it if we wanted to. And that helps protect them some from government requests, not just in China, but in the US. I mean, we've seen a lot of requests, and sometimes not even requests, from governments here to get access to information.
Apple also recently released a diversity report following some pressure to do so. And like much of Silicon Valley, it is still heavily white and male, but 18% of its employees are Black or Hispanic, which is a lot higher than Facebook, Twitter, Google, Yahoo, all around 5 or 6%. What does that tell you?
Well, Apple cares a lot about diversity. That said, they get a little bit of a boost or a significant boost from the fact that they have so many stores and have all these retail employees. That means, one, retail workers, obviously a different tech pool that you're drawing from versus engineers to work on Apple's campus. And then also it's across the country, so Apple can draw from a different geographic base. So I think on the ethnic diversity front, Apple's getting a little bit of an extra boost. It's pardon the phrase, not an apples-to-apples comparison. Mm. Apple has been a leader in other areas in terms of promoting protections for lesbian, gay, bi, and transgender workers. That's an area where Apple really has taken the lead.
But you're saying in this case, it could be that they've got a high amount of diversity among the people in the Genius Bar or the people selling you your iPhone in the Apple Store, but maybe not necessarily at headquarters in Cupertino.
They certainly probably don't have significantly different than their peers in Silicon Valley. The real issue is there's a shortage of skilled tech labor in general and in specific among women and minorities. And that won't really change for Apple, Google, Facebook, or anyone else until we recruit more women and minorities into the computer sciences.
Ina Fried, senior editor with our friends at the tech news site Recode. Ina, thank you so much.
Thanks.